Scott Ian is on the hotline right now from Anthrax. Of course, more than 10 million records sold and tons of great bands like Stormtroopers of Death and The Damn Things and Motor Sister.
I wish they'd do another Damn Things record. It was really good. That was really an underrated album. I still listen to that album.
Yeah.
And over the years, he's become a good friend. I mean, I remember watching these guys with Metal Church. You know, I believe the first time I saw him. It was either Metallica, I can't remember which it was, but the Uptown Theater back in 84 or 5. And they were incredible. I mean, just I remember the first time I wore Among the Living out. I mean, I murdered that vinyl.
Yeah.
To the point where I had to buy a second copy. It was so blown out from the needle.
Born December 31st in Queens, New York. In 1981, he helped form the band that would become known alongside Metallica, Megadeth, and Slayer as one of the big four founding fathers of thrash metal. That band is the legendary Anthrax. With over 15 million albums sold worldwide, they also made their mark, mixing hip-hop and metal with their cover of Public Enemy's Bring the Noise. The band released a new album, For All Kings, earlier this year. He told his story in his book, I'm the Man. He's currently the host of his own radio show, Never Meet Your Heroes, on satellite radio. And on April 10th, alongside Killswitch Engage, Anthrax rolls into the Midland Theater. Please welcome, friend of the show, Anthrax guitarist Scott Ian.
Hey Scott, how you been, brother?
Hey man, good, how are you?
Good, man. I broke out I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax this weekend, just to kind of revisit it before we got on the show today, man. I forgot how much I love that book.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you. Did I hear you say it was 6 degrees there right now?
Yeah, six. It's awful, man.
And, you know, I don't mind being up this early here in Southern California knowing that it's 60 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you grew up on the East Coast, though, so you know. I mean, you bailed out of there. You're like, I ain't having no more of this.
Yeah, like 27 years ago, which is amazing considering I've been in California now more than half my life. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, though. You still, to me, and I really do believe I can tell if a band, when it's the second I meet them, I can interview them, and I'll know if that's a California band or it's a New York band. And that may sound ridiculous, but I'm telling you, any band from the South or the Southeast works on a different level and a lot harder, and it's a lot more blue-collar than West Coast bands that are purely West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. There's definitely a difference, you know, being from... certainly from New York, let alone the East Coast. Even just being a New Yorker who's lived out here for so long, it rained here the other day. And, you know, when it rains in Los Angeles, people instantly forget that everyone's 14 and it's the first time they've ever driven a car. Accidents go up. I'm not joking. I read a stat. Accidents here go up like 570% if it's raining for 15 minutes. And I just, you know, I drive circles around people normally anyway. I drive like a New York City taxi driver. So when it's raining, it's even more fun.
Oh, sure. By the way, how's the family? Everybody's good?
Yeah, everyone's good.
Good. We had Meat on the show the other day, and he is one of the greatest interviews because his give an F is busted. His opinions are clear, and he doesn't hold anything back. I love having that guy on the show because his views on music, I totally get.
Yeah. He's, you know. People ask I get asked that question quite a bit, what's it like to have Meatloaf as your father-in-law? It's different now because it's been a long time, but certainly in the beginning it was, it definitely kept me on my toes, let's put it that way.
One can only imagine because, yeah, I don't believe he gives anybody, there's no quarter in his world. It just is.
There's a very, very hard line in the sand, and you're either with him or you're against him.
Dude, I get that. You know what? I love that mentality. I do think you got to choose a side in this world sometimes, man.
Look, I went into this when I first even started dating Pearl, and I had to go to his house the first time. I was nervous as hell because I was a fan as a kid. You know, I saw him play in 1978, and I very much went in knowing what the pecking order was. You know, like, I'm a guy in, you know, like a metal band called Anthrax, but he's a giant rock star. It's a big, you know, big difference.
Oh, sure. No, no, his legend is unbelievable. But listen, we'll get back to that. I want to get to this. Killswitch Engage, you guys rolling into Kansas City, April 10th at the Midland Theater, which will be a ridiculously good show, man. And I'm so glad you guys are still hammering away. I didn't know how long Joey would stay and if it would stick together. And, you know, you just never know about these things. So I'm really glad to see that, man.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great tour. You know, we've been working always really hard, forever. But in the last, it's going on 7 years already now that Joey's been back. Just, you know, we've been busting our ass with the, you know, two records and nonstop touring pretty much for 7 years. And to the point now where, you know, we've come through a bunch of times around the world, randomly headlining, but mostly, you know, supporting other bands, whether we were out with Motorhead or out with Slayer, out with Iron Maiden. But working to build ourselves back to the point where now we could actually go out and, you know, do this this co-headline thing with us at Killswitch and get to the point where, like, it is our responsibility again. We're not just the opening band, and it feels good to, you know, be back at that place.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, I hope there's some more Big Four shows. I mean, who knows if it'll ever happen, but those were great. I mean, you think about, you know, you guys and Metallica and Megadeth and Slayer. It's just those were some pretty legendary moments, man.
Oh, we hope. Believe me, we hope so too. And you know, I saw Robert Trujillo mention something. You know, obviously, they're out doing a lot of promotion for their record right now, and Robert said something in the British press about how he hopes after their initial touring commitments are done that they're going to do more Big Four shows. And then I actually just interviewed Kirk for my radio show, which won't air till next month, but he straight up said he thinks we're going to do it again. But we'll take that for, you know, what it's worth. The phone hasn't rang yet, let's put it that way.
Well, dude, I'll tell you what. I don't know what transpired in that band, what happened, but I can't tell you how happy I am about that Metallica record. I can't tell you how happy I am about the way Kirk's solo sound. Like to me, and this isn't about disparaging previous albums. This is about, like, I'm like, there it is. That's the Metallica, for me personally, that I fell in love with in the beginning. And I think it's an incredibly good record.
Yeah, you know, I mean, bands work really, really hard.
It's just, yeah, sure. Well, it's always tough, man. Yeah,
to do that, to make a record that, you know, that they're happy with, you know, first and foremost. You know, the record is a record that they were happy with, and that's the only reason why any record gets to see the light of day, is because the band is happy with the end product. And the fact that people are really connecting with it is obviously just, for them, it's I'm sure they're thrilled.
Well, you know, you guys, again, like going back to you and Joey, the classic Anthrax lineup, that's what so many people love. Dude, Bush is a badass singer, no doubt about it. Some of my favorite Anthrax records were with Bush. But there's something about the one you fell in love with that rings and resonates so genuinely. And, you know, we don't know many. You know, we lost Lemmy last year. And you never know how many more summers you've got, man. You know, you got to put stuff behind you and do great records and go out and tour your ass off and wring every bit of life out of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're still enjoying doing this, then, yeah, well, you know, why would you ever stop? And all of us, certainly, in Anthrax, we wouldn't be working this hard, and we wouldn't be out there doing this if it was for the fact that it was still fun. You know, it's never fun to leave your home and leave your families and do it, but you get out there on tour and you're playing shows every night and you remember exactly why you're in a band. And there's no, you don't get that reaction. You don't get that type of feeling anywhere else in the world other than being on stage in front of a live audience, and specifically, you know, a metal audience, because it's obviously, there's more energy, there's more aggression, there's more of everything, you know, in that live situation. And you don't get that. There's no other job that gives you that feeling and that emotion and that power and that energy. You know, you could say, well, people do live theater on Broadway, but like I said, that's a different crowd than a metal audience.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Yankee Stadium, how many years since the first inception of Anthrax was the Yankee Stadium Big Four? How many years is that in between?
Well, the show was in September of 2011, so, and the band started in July of 1981.
Yeah, so I mean,
30 years.
So 30 years. and you hit the guitar chords, you know, for Antisocial, you know, or Evil Niffle Fussin' or Madhouse or Got the Time, and you see, I mean, how that must feel to see Yankee Stadium light up because they know it and they're ready for it.
Yeah, well, you know, you've picked the high note.
Yeah, right. I mean,
you know, for me, anyone who's a, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are listening to your show that are, you know, Royals fans or Chiefs fans, and the idea that if they had a band and they ever got to play, you know, the sacred ground of their beloved team's, you know, stadium, that's what it was for me. Growing up in New York City and being a lifelong Yankee fan, the fact that my band was playing out in center field, it's something that I still have a hard time wrapping my head around, actually.
Oh, man, isn't it a great life? It really is. And I feel like, you know, you have to stay in the game. You know, when you go through the book, you know, everything that you went through in the span of Anthrax, just getting the band signed, just becoming part of it, just touring and working everything out and marriages and relationships and everything it takes to become and stay relevant. You know, you have to stay in the game. The book, you know, TV shows, you know, getting out in front of people, you just have to stay relevant. It takes a lot of work and a lot of creativity, man.
You know, all of the outside things that I do, you know, that obviously have all stemmed from the fact that because I'm in Anthrax, I get these opportunities. It's not like if I wasn't in the band, my phone would be ringing. But, you know, because I've been in this band for so long and I guess I became a recognizable character, you know, so the phone started ringing to do outside stuff. And I always only ever based it on one thing. Am I going to have fun doing this? Because I don't want to leave my house.
Right.
When I'm home, if it's, you know, if it's quote unquote work, let's say, and granted it's all work, but is it going to be something I'm going to enjoy to do, you know? And that's how I've only ever judged any of these things and said yes or no on, especially the book, because I said no to doing a book for probably close to 7 years. I was getting, every few months I'd get the call or an email, we've got a publisher who's interested, and I would just say no. It did not sound like fun. It sounded like a lot of work, and you know, honestly, I just felt like if I took somebody's money to make a book, then you have to do the work, and I just really never thought I would get, it would take me 10 years to write it. I would just never work on it. But when I started doing those talking tour shows where I was out on tour just myself telling stories, I ended up writing half the book without even like knowing it. And that's when I realized, hey, this is actually a lot of fun. and I called up and I said, I've already got like half a book together. Let's make this happen. So it just all kind of worked out.
Well, I think you got to be the rock star that you are, in the sense that you cannot be afraid of the funny stuff, the, you know, self-deprecating stuff, and the high end and the low end, all the truths. I mean, that's what makes people love a figure like that, you know, because when you read those books where everything is golden, everything is what a god they are, and it doesn't ring true, because we know life's not really like that. Dude, just the simple fact that when you smoke weed, you almost die, it made me laugh, because I can't smoke weed either. And I just was like, Jesus Christ, man. Who tells that story? It just makes me laugh. Eating the mushrooms and jumping out of the limousine, that makes me laugh, because that's just that human bizarre behavior that just comes along with the lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, those stories for me are, I think anyone can identify with those. I think anyone who's old enough to remember the stupid things they did, you know, between the ages of like 15 and 25, which is pretty much everyone on the planet, you know, who has lived through those years. Everyone's got a story to tell that's probably equally as ridiculous as, you know, me thinking I was in a limousine filled with zombies, but actually I was just on mushrooms. You know, everyone's got one of those stories, and you know, I just felt like I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
If you're gonna write a book, then you should just be honest about things, and people will identify with it, because you know, everybody, no matter what you do in life, still most of us all can identify with all the same types of really crappy situations we've been in sometimes.
Oh, it reminded me of, when I was talking to you at the interview about that, we talked about the limo after the interview. It reminded me of a story I'd never shared on the air about I was at my house at Christmas time with a few friends, and somebody brought over a big bag of mushrooms, so we decided to eat those. Then it's all balls out. There's a fire going in the fireplace. There's an Andy Kaufman, the movie with Jim Carrey's on television, but we've got the sound turned down and Murder Doll's first record up at full blast. And I can't find enough stuff to burn in my house, and they catch me downstairs trying to plug a power saw in to cut apart chairs so I can throw it in the goddamn fire. Like, it's, I mean, madness. Just madness, man.
So, yeah, well, you know, and then hopefully you learn your lesson and you realize that's something that just is not my friend, and I'm not going to hang out with that thing anymore. Because, yeah, I would never. I love the idea of mushrooms, but I would never ever put that in my body again.
Yeah, you know, I still will. I do it like in Amsterdam with a good friend. If it's in a really good place and it's a really light feel, you know, like,
yeah, I can't. I have such vivid memories of what happened to me, you know, sure, in the mid-90s on that, you know, I'm actually just straight up, I'm afraid of it now, you know, like, I'm afraid. I don't know what I would do and what would happen. I'm very much a person who needs to be in control of his brain, or I should say, my brain needs to be in control. And you know, when you're on mushrooms, you're not. And I believe me, I get it. I'm not taking anything away from it. If people who enjoy to partake, but it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, you know what? I won't do acid for that reason. I'm afraid to take that now. I did it when I was a kid, but I'm afraid I've compartmentalized too many things that I probably don't want to revisit. You know, like, am I?
I've never done it. I was the same way even as a kid. I saw some of my friends who were, you know, getting into that, and you know, like 15 years old, and they were already like burnt out. I was like, no, man, I don't want to be like that. So yeah. I stayed away.
Oh, it's a funny life because you live a healthy life. And it's funny, we talk about you leaving to go on the road, like coming to Kansas City with Killswitch in April. But in your book, you know, not every relationship was fantastic. And I love the fact that, you know, now with Pearl, you hate leaving home because it's that happy. Like, it's a good place. And I was lucky enough to meet her when you guys came in the studio. And she really is, like, you can see as soon as she walks in the door, like, her soul is good. You know, she's not L.A. She's something. She's a real human, like a genuinely nice cat.
Well, she's not. She was born in New York. She's East Coast, too. She moved out here in the late 90s.
There you go. How's is she going to have another record out? Is she still working on that?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Jay Rustin, you know, who we work with at Anthrax, and he's currently going to start the new Stone Sour record. And, he's mixing her record right now. And it's been a long time coming. You know, she just kind of shut it all down back in 2011 when she gave birth to our son. And it's been 5 years now that she's slowly been working on stuff and coming back to, you know, being able to be a singer again. And there's a record is recorded and it's being mixed right now. And then her managers are going to figure out, you know, what's the in this new realm that we live in, or we will be living in 2017. You know, the record business pretty much changes every week these days.
Right.
So just going to figure out, okay, like, how do we get people to hear this record now? What's the, you know, because you don't want to just put it out there and have it disappear. People need to hear this record, and that's their job, is to figure out how to get it to people's ears.
Well, you know what? You're right. It has all changed, and some for the good, some for the bad. There's part of me that's really glad they burned down the old forest, because I think there was just a lot of, you know, scamboogery, if you will, that really hurt bands. But we've also lost the direct gate and the distribution that it used to have. You know, at least you knew your music would get out there. So it's six and one, half dozen the other, I suppose, man. But there's...
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, for me, bottom line, that obviously, because if I'm going to be honest, it affects my wallet, you know.
Sure, of course.
The fact that people don't buy records the way they used to, you know, that bums me out. And not just on that level of, oh, it's less money in my pocket because I'm in the band, but just to me, the whole experience of buying records, and for me, there's whoever's not buying them anymore, or if it's just, you know, because everybody's streaming or whatever the case may be. But, you know, for me, that's just a bummer. I was at Amoeba Records just 2 days ago in Hollywood. It's a giant.
It's unbelievable.
I'm sure you know it.
I was there in July, and I walked around for 2 days. I went back a second day.
Oh, it's. I've been there 1,000 times, and every time I walk in, it's overwhelming, and I have to like stop myself from spending $5,000.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's the Taj Mahal of record stores, and that experience for me, like especially since I went out and bought a turntable again, now going in and buying vinyl and all these records I already own on vinyl, now buying them remastered on vinyl, mm-hmm. because I have the originals from the 70s, they don't sound as good. So, like, you know, I love that experience. I love going in and like, oh my God, it's the first Boston record, or, you know, I just got like Back in Black and Allman Brothers at Fillmore East, and, you know, just buying all this stuff on vinyl again. I'm like a kid in a candy store. So I just wish more people would have that experience, because I think it's very fulfilling.
Oh, no, it was the best. No, you would go. And I remember that's how I got my first Megadeth record, was you went to, for us, it was Record Bar at Oak Park Mall, and there was a handful of guys, and they were your guides, because there was no internet. You're like, hey, man, what should I buy? And you go, try this, kid. It doesn't suck. And it was Ian McAtee. I'm still friends with the guy from when I was 15 years old. And he would give me records, or he'd see me look at something and go, no. And he'd take it away from you. And just, I mean, but then I worked at a record store for a couple years with Greg on the show here before the skateboard shop. And it just, man, I loved those days because I loved the idea of it. You know, you knew everybody that came in. They were into music. It didn't matter if it was your music. They were still cool. Like it was a certain, you know, camaraderie that you knew was always going to be there in those record stores.
Sure. You know what? On the other hand, though, I don't want to sound like Grandpa Metal, even though I am most of the time. But I love streaming as well because, like, you know, I listen to more music now than I've ever listened to in my life because I, at the touch of my fingertips through, like, Spotify in my house, and I have Sonos all over the house, and I could listen to anything at any given moment all day long. It's like being on the Jetsons for me, you know? Like, so I just showed my age with the Jetsons.
No, I totally get it. I feel the same way.
I love streaming, too.
Well, it reminds me of bands I forgot about. Like, I'll run across and be like, oh, yeah, I love this band. Because, you know, over the time, you lose records or CDs, you just forget. But I'll tell you, the one thing I do now is when I really love a band, I don't even take the promo copy from the radio station anymore. I make it a point to at least online buy it. If I don't go buy the vinyl, I at least buy it. Because I do know it's a tough time for artists. And it's important. If you really love a band, you got to buy the record.
I buy everything.
Yeah. No, I totally get it, man. Hey, Scott, brother, I just realized how much of your time I took up. It's always good to talk to you, man. I'm such a fan, and I can't wait to see you in April. I'll definitely be at the show with Killswitch, and awesome. Tickets are on sale now. And man, Merry Christmas, man. I hope your boy is 5 this year. He's got to be ridiculous with it. He's got to be crazy.
Yeah, he's actually 5 and a half today, so we're having like a mini celebration.
I have a friend who used to do that because it was so close to Christmas. They used to do half of birthdays.
Ah, okay.
So they would literally sing half a birthday to you. So that'll be fun, man. That'll be good. Good. You take care. I will see you in just a few months. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, you too. Happy holidays. And happy holidays, everyone. And we'll see you soon.
Take care, man.